Good evening. James McCanny here with my Science Hour. Starting off with mention of the Dalton water filters, just remember that these are available on my webpage, and the special offer right now continues. Actually, I want to make a little announcement here. The wholesale pricing on these has gone up, but I've kept my pricing the same. Just because these are something that we really need right now. The Dalton water filter comes with the four Dalton Super Sterisil white candles. It's $289. That includes shipping to the 50 states. And also I have flat price shipping to Canada and other foreign destinations, $21 shipping to Canada, to any location in Canada, and $41 shipping to any other location in the world. So that helps people abroad understand that they can get these and not have to worry about outrageous shipping prices. But a lot of topics to cover tonight. I'll be talking about some of the commodities that I believe will be in short supply in coming months. And so I'll talk about that a little bit of an update on the radiation issues in Japan. First of all, I want to remind you that next week, this show will be changing frequencies. Right now it's heard, of course, on 5.0570 megahertz. And next week, we'll go to the summertime frequency of 9.350 megahertz. So just put that on your calendar. It's also noted on my webpage, jmccsci.com. And go there if you need information. Now, this does not affect the Friday night or the Saturday morning airing of this show. The Friday night, 10 p.m. Central Time, or Saturday morning, 3 a.m. Central Time, is on a different, completely different frequency, so that does not affect that. The only show that's affected is the live airing at Thursday evening, 6 p.m. next week, starting next week, March 31st, will be on frequency 9.350 megahertz. And I believe that it'll also stream, if you listen on the internet to the WWCR stream, then it will be on Tower 2. But if it's not, just click on Tower 1 or 3 or 4, and you should be able to pick it up. And just remember that the internet stream sometimes is delayed up to a couple minutes. Sometimes it's right on time with the live broadcast, and sometimes it's delayed a little bit, so just so you're aware of that. Okay, summertime frequencies, and that's because this show is at the cusp of the day and nighttime, and so as we roll into summer, I'm more on a daytime slot, and so therefore we roll to that, what we call the summertime frequency. Okay, Japan radioactive update. There is so much bad information coming out. All I can assume is that the situation there is extremely bad and no one wants to talk about it. I look through the news media. We have government agencies in this country that are supposed to be on top of this, that are supposed to be knowledgeable in the area of radiation. We don't hear anything from this. Once again, government in this country, the United States, totally inept. We're getting reports. I saw one today that the radiation has reached Sweden. And the problem is this is going to go on over time. This is not something that's going to just happen for a couple days and go away. So all I can tell you is that we don't know. We're not getting good information. Just like the Gulf of Mexico, the oil spill, which is going on. I just got a report here. The Coast Guard, this came out yesterday, actually. Coast Guard said that they saw a three-mile-long rainbow sheen, it says, off the Louisiana coast. They went back to take samples. I didn't hear the end result of that. And but that it's not certain if that is from the BP oil spill or some other oil spill. This planet is being run by fools and idiots, and that's the one thing. I was just talking with a friend of mine a little while ago, and we were discussing some of the issues here. The world has a social problem in the first world countries like the United States and Europe. The problem, and I talk about this in my book, The Diamond Principle, the problem is the people who are unaware. The people who have no clue what's going on, and they kind of have this kind of glazed over look on their face. A lot of times they're hardworking people. They go to work, they do their job, they do everything right. But the one thing that we have a problem is that these people are just so clueless. And I have one thing to say. I said it in The Diamond Principle, my latest book, and I'll say it again. The world can no longer wait for the unaware to wake up. We don't have time. We don't have the luxury. A lot of times people who are unaware live in that ozone layer because they have daily food, they go to a job, they make their house payment, everything seems good to them. It's like the guy who drives slow in the left lane on a speedy, busy highway, freeway. He doesn't have a traffic problem. He's always got a lot of room in front of him, and life is good. He just can't figure out why all those other people are trying to get by him. That's the problem we have with unaware people in the world, and we cannot wait any longer for the unaware. The problem is that in this country of the United States, if you have 10% or 15% of the population that goes on unaware, they can vote, they make the illusion, they keep this illusion going that we have democracy, that your party lost this time, doggone, but our party won, and gee, things will be good for a while, but you can get a chance to vote your party in 4 more years. And people think, oh, well, I lost, you know, we can vote our guys, next time we'll really vote in some people that'll cause change. No, this is just a dog and pony show, and it's been going on for 100 years, and it's not going to change. Until people wake up and realize that the banking community of the world is destroying the world. It's very simple. In all of the related issues, the military, the scientific, the ownership of science, and engineering, which allows them to be in power. I'll be talking about what's going on with Google. Google was something that started out. Facebook was something started out. All of these things started out as kind of a nice way for people to communicate, or in the case of Google, a search engine. Now they were ever present, and they are infiltrating your life in ways that you have never imagined. But being taken over by the security agencies that are the right arm of the banking community. That a lot of people don't understand that the CIA in the United States, they're not here to protect you or your rights. They're here to be the right-hand arm of the banking community, the European banking community. This was started after World War II, the intelligence agencies. It's not to help you. It's to help keep you down. Let's put it that way. To cause trouble in the world, to make sure the bankers have their ongoing wars. So, at any rate, the people who are completely unaware of how the world works and what's really going on are a big part of the problem. And as I said, we can no longer wait for these people. We can't wait for the scientists and engineers to wake up that they don't own the inventions. The good work that they do is taken over. Like I mentioned last week, the scientists who designed the reactors that are now in Japan blowing up and steaming and sending radiation into the world, that their designs, some of them said that they had told the companies that these designs would not withstand this level of destruction, and they aren't, and they said the companies went ahead and sold them anyway. Once again, the scientists do not own their inventions. So at any rate, this leads into just a quick topic. The pre-filter last August, I introduced a product on my webpage. It was called the Pre-Filter, the Universal Pre-Filter, and it will take out sludge and gunk, and in fact will take out radiation. It may not take out 100% of the radiation. These kind of things are very difficult to measure, so there's no way we can make a claim that it'll take out 100% of a certain type of pollutant in water. But the one thing you are sure of is that you don't want to put radioactive water or sludge water or polluted water, raw polluted water, into your water filter. Now, this fits every model of water filter out there, whether it's, I won't name other brand names, but the major brand named water filters, if you have one that's a stainless steel water filter, this will fit it. And of course, it's I sell the Dalton water filters, so it fits that, of course, but it'll fit any of the major, and it also fits the plastic models, the plastic high-density polyethylene water filter that I sell, that fits that also. It's a way to pre-filter your water to get the gunk or whatever out before you put that water into your water filter. Radiation usually is carried on dust particles, and once those dust particles get into a certain area, especially in water or in mud or whatever, they tend to grab on and stay there. So you don't want to cause your water filter to become radioactive as you're filtering water through it over time. So the bottom line is, I'm putting the, and I announced this last week, and I'm sorry, we got a lot of calls from people who were looking for the pre-filter on the webpage. It will go up tonight. We just had to wait another week before to get well stocked and prepared. What happened last August was, it was one of those problems most people would like to have. We sold, and we didn't catch it in time. So we sold a lot of pre-filters, and people were good about waiting until the orders were finally filled. But now we're getting prepared for what I know will be a surge of purchases on this item. And so, just to let you know that by this evening, sometime later this evening, the pre-filter will be posted and up there on my webpage, jmccsci.com. And basically, here's what it amounts to. It's a high, very high quality, hard, high density plastic cap that sits on top of your water filter, and you put one of three types of powders in there. You could use two or three, and the instructions come with it, so I'm not going to explain that. But basically, it's a pre-filter. And you put the water in there, and then once your pre-filter powders have been thoroughly used, you just toss it out and put some new powder in, and you're good to go again. So it's a very inexpensive way to filter, pre-filter your water and get things out. It will take out radiation. It'll take out sludge and chemicals. It'll take out chemicals that are in solution. But once again, there's no way to say that it'll take out 100% or a certain percentage. It's just a way to clean up your water before you pour it in, before your water enters the clean water filter, Dalton water filter or other brand. And like I say, this will fit any brand water filter. So go to the webpage. The price will include shipping to the 50 states, and it'll be the same issue with shipping to Canada, $21 flat rate, or $41 flat rate to Europe, or other countries internationally. Okay, enough on that, but sorry about, I announced it last week, and we just had a few things to get in place before really putting it up on the webpage, but you will see the pre-filter up there later this evening for purchase. It'll be called the Universal Pre-Filter. You'll see it there. Okay, a couple of quick items here. Sunspot 1165, coming around the edge of the sun, has grown in size since the last time we saw it. And This could be throwing some flares out. These are hard to predict, but we'll keep you posted on that. The sunspot activity on the sun has been very low for a long time, so now the sun could be becoming more active, so we'll try and keep you updated on that particular issue. Just a quick note on this winter. It seems to be the winter that just does not want to end. So all I can say is hold on to your hats and hope that we have a growing season this summer. I got this in an email from a friend of mine, another talk show host, saying that the airlines that are coming back from Japan into the cloth and the seating, etc., as I said, just imagine dust, radioactive dust. It can get any place, and as it floats in the air, I gave a little discussion last week at how the jet streams work. Listen to that show. I'm not going to repeat it, but the bottom line is that the radiation will be carried in the jet stream, and it will basically go every place. As I just said, it's already being detected in Sweden. So the world has a major problem, and this is not going to go away. I'm just amazed at the lack of reporting in the major news media, like somehow this is a problem in Japan, and it's really not a problem here. It's a major problem here. And radiation is cumulative, so as this goes on over time, the radiation will accumulate, not go away. So is it going to pollute the growing fields in the United States, the breadbasket of the world, as it's sometimes called? It's hard to predict exactly where all of this is going. I'm going to switch gears a little bit because this topic, I experienced it myself this past week. A lot of you maybe saw it out there and really didn't know what was happening. But anyway, Google did something this week, and it was a number of days ago, and it hit pretty much everybody. What they sent out was a new toolbar. Now, this happens quite frequently, but they install it on your computer without your asking. They go in, they search on all of the browsers that you have, and install their toolbar at the top. You have a chance when this happens to say, no, I don't want this, and then it deinstalls from your computer, supposedly. But I wouldn't want to bet you that I noticed that funny things are happening on my computer, even though I uninstalled this with the uninstall window that came along with this. And as it closed out, it wanted to make sure that I really wanted to uninstall this because there were a lot of benefits that Google was going to give me to allow their toolbar on my browser. One of them was they were going to track everything I did on my computer. Gee, how swell of them. Also, as I said, they come in and they load this up on all your browsers, even though your browsers haven't been launched. This happened the other day. Now, another story, another Google story, is I found this out. When you go get an Android phone now, Google has a service. I don't know if I would call it a service, but they have a service. And this is very unobtrusive. When you buy the phone, the salesperson says, to open this account, we need to set up a Google mailbox for you. And it sounds innocent enough, and like, oh, okay, well, maybe, to get some email or something like that. No. What the Google mailbox is for is everything you do on your phone is shipped off to Google, where it is then kept. It's a record of everything you do on your Android phone. So I just wanted to let you know, and the particular one that I had this understood this experience with was the Verizon Thunderbolt. It was just released about a week and a half ago, possibly. So at any rate, I suspect this is true across the board. I haven't researched the entire field of Android phones, but that's one particular thing. So Google is just out there to be your friend, doing all kinds of great things to make sure your communication experience is really top-notch. Also, there was some research done, and you can find this information on the Internet, that Facebook is owned now by the CIA, a subsidiary, a think tank, and the information search group, basically owned by the CIA. That's a company, the downline company of the CIA. And what they do is all of the pictures that you put up there and all the information you put up there about yourself or your friends and your friend network is recorded in massive computer banks at Facebook. And, of course, these many people have just average cameras, you know, like one of these little ones that you carry for tourism. Some people have better cameras. Some people have excellent cameras. But at any rate, even these relatively inexpensive tourist cameras now might have, 12 megapixels, which is enough to zoom into your eyeball and get a reading on your eye. And after you have enough pictures of a person, you can get some very intricate data on the physical characteristics of this person, of all your friends, etc. So that's Facebook. I just want you to know that. Now, this is what happens. Remember Wikipedia. Wikipedia started out as just a friendly little idea of this guy, and it was an idea to use the Internet. To have everybody, something that everybody can write information into an encyclopedia. It didn't depend on teams of experts hired by companies like Britannica or Americana or some of the other Colliers. What were some of the other old-fashioned book encyclopedias where the guy would come around to your house and sell you this book of knowledge and the yearbook, etc.? No, now all of this could be contained on the Internet, and Wikipedia would allow anybody to write their information into Wikipedia. And so that was the idea. Well, it didn't take long for the people in charge to take that one over also. And between Google and Wikipedia and Facebook, you have a tremendous amount of information gathering. Now, what happened with Wikipedia, and I know this personally from experience also, what happened is, of course, as you might expect, my name got smashed and thrown around there, and I had nothing to do with posting anything there, but people who had no knowledge of me, did not know anything about me, started writing articles. Eventually, as I understood it, my name was completely taken out of Wikipedia as if I didn't even exist. Well, that's pretty strange because every little thing in the planet just about is described in Wikipedia. But what happened is that by the old expression, bad publicity is good publicity. It drew a lot of people to my webpage, and people went there and thought, hey, a lot of times once the people arrived at my webpage, they didn't necessarily even remember how they got there. They just started going there and getting information and getting a good education on how the world really worked. So bad advertisement actually turned into good advertisement. So for me, in that respect. But if you go, the point about Wikipedia is there is a lot of good information there. But as the old expression goes, if you want to catch fish, you need good bait. You can't have all garbage information on there. People would recognize it and they wouldn't go there. But in conjunction with Google, when you do a Google search on anything, gee, what's the first thing that pops up there? Or one of the first things, no matter what topic you search on, Wikipedia. And so Wikipedia has turned into a disinformation site where certain topics, especially dealing with science, space science, comets, those type of things, are very tightly controlled. Anything dealing with a long list of topics that might be considered controversial topics, you get the standard government party line. So at any rate, all I'm saying here is that the internet is a very controlled world. In fact, someone, I don't have time to do this myself, but someone could make a real killing out there with a website, something like Not Google, a NOG site, Not Google, N-O-G, NOG.com, as any of you young entrepreneurs out there. And what that site would do is would whenever you did searches, whenever you did something on the internet, it would tell you what kind of things Google was up to with your computer, with your internet searches, etc. And so it would be a way of running a lot of traffic to a website, and if you had some advertising on there, you'd probably do quite well because people are becoming more and more aware. By the way, when I confronted a Verizon salesman about the issue of Google, they just seemed to think it was the thing to do, but they were pretty sheepish about talking about it when I pointed out that a lot of people would not care for this on their phone, to have everything they do reported to Google, as if Google was your buddy out there. So anyway, just something, go to your web page and browsers, and you will probably find a new toolbar there. I'm not sure how to uninstall it, but you probably want to do it if you have Firefox or Internet Explorer, whatever your browser. And then I also understand that if you have email accounts and other things, they have loaded toolbars onto just about any type of application that could have a toolbar. So I'm not sure how extensive this is. I haven't been able to research it 100% myself. But anyway, just to let you know, somebody is out there watching everything you do through Google. Okay, enough of that. Here's an announcement that came out a week ago. I wanted to do this on a show a couple weeks ago. There was another false alarm, big splash announcement that someone had discovered the lost continent of Atlantis. And let me see if I can pull that. Here it is. It's from March 14th. The Daily Mail Reporter, this is from, just to give you an idea, the dailymail.com UK. It's out of the UK. And once again, U.S.-led research team, this being announced in the UK, right away, red flags go up, disinformation. Why are they announcing this? What's the cover story? So at any rate, scientists are convinced that Atlantis is submerged just north of Cadiz, Spain. I'm reading from this article here, and then the title, "Has the real lost city of Atlantis really finally been found, buried under mudflats in Spain?" And so anyway, they go on. And what also tipped me off right away that this was a misinformation article is it was highly publicized in National Geographic, what I consider one of the bigger disinformation fronts going today, along with Discover Magazine, the Discovery Channel, the History Channel. These are all misinformation fronts. And they have a lot of good information, certainly a lot of pretty pictures in National Geographic, and a lot of good information, a lot of good stories on nature, etc. But when it comes to how the world works, National Geographic is a very used commodity. So at any rate, why would National Geographic do this big spread on something that turns out to be extremely speculative? The so-called cities that they found were using satellite imagery. Now, they claim to have found some cities that were built on the same principles as Atlantis. Well, there's about 200 other cities in the world, ancient cities, that are built along the same lines, same architectural lines as Atlantis. People have claimed that the Mayans, the Aztecs, the Incas, there are places in Scandinavia. There are places all over the world that people have claimed were Atlantis. But at any rate, the cities that they're claiming to have found were built long, long after Atlantis. They're not related to Atlantis. So there's one level of speculation that the cities that they have discovered were not Atlantis, but built long after Atlantis had gone under. So that's one level of speculation away from actually discovering Atlantis. They say that Atlantis was beyond the Pillars of Hercules. The classic mistake that Atlantis hunters make, the classic mistake, is that they speculate that the Rock of Gibraltar is actually the Pillars of Hercules. It's very clear from ancient texts that the Pillars of Hercules were two extremely large or high altitude plumes of smoke coming out of volcanoes, Krakatoa being one and the sister volcano, that were on both sides of the straits that entered the next to Java in the Sunda Straits that led into the South China Sea. Those were the Pillars of Hercules in ancient times. So this thing, when Plato started talking about what his uncle Solon told him, some people jumped to the conclusion, since Greece was in the Mediterranean, they jumped to the conclusion that the Pillars of Hercules were the rocks of Gibraltar, but that was simply not true. The ancient texts are very clear that the Pillars of Hercules, as I said, were plumes of volcanic steam and smoke coming up from the Sunda Strait, with Krakatoa being one of them. And remember that the sister volcano is pretty much missing now because of big recent explosions. But at any rate, Atlantis is in the South China Sea. So why do they continue avoiding the truth and continue pointing out a couple years ago it was in the Mediterranean and a couple years before that it was someplace else? Why do they continue to promote these sites that could not possibly be Atlantis? Well, somebody has a big interest in keeping the real information of Atlantis away from the public. So at any rate, I have some more information about that in my Atlantis to Tesla, the Colburn Connection book. Let me see if I have other notes in this article here. But anyway, that's the gist of it. I just wanted to mention, why the ongoing disinformation. And I guess it was possibly a timely article in the sense that it would take a tsunami to cause this devastation that they were finding in Cadiz, Spain. There are some marshes there and apparently some archaeological activity, some ancient cities there, according to these scientists. But that's the other thing. They haven't dug anything up yet. They haven't really discovered anything. So this announcement, and this big announcement by National Geographic, is extremely premature. It would take 10 or possibly 20 more years before they had enough information to even say that these cities were remotely related to architecture of some type of Atlantis, and who even knows that? So as you see, this article, extremely speculative. So why is National Geographic going way out of its way to blow this article up into something that it is not? Along the lines of, I was talking before about people who are simply unaware, a friend of mine, talk show host John Moore, sent me an email this last week, and you know how some people have quotes at the bottom of their email. Here's one he had at the bottom of his email. It says, "Those who are unaware of being unaware." And that's great. That's the quote. He's from Merrill Jenkins, author of Money, the Greatest Hoax on Earth. But anyway, I'll say that again. Those who are unaware of being unaware. So it says it all. As I was saying, the biggest problem we have now in the United States, and I know you know people like this, I know people like this, they're just don't have a clue. I was talking with some friends of mine the other night who are, I would consider, in the clueless category. I know we all have friends that are like that. And they were realizing that their house value was very much lower than what their build value was 5 or 6 years ago. You know, $500,000 house now worth $300,000. And so they were just discussing it and what would happen if they sold it. They would have to somehow make this money up. And they're going, you know, we want to be honest and pay our bills, but, you know, how can we take a $200,000 hit? And one of them says, yeah, well, the bank, you know, should feel some of this pain also. Well, the bank is the one that loaned you money. Well, not money. They loaned you air in the first place. They didn't have any money to loan you. They wrote a number on a piece of paper and claimed they had money. So at any rate, this is what I'm talking about. The clueless people that just the bane of our society. And as I said before, we can't wait any longer for these people to wake up. A short note here on I said I was going to talk about upcoming shortages, and these are the things that I see as people wake up in mass. Now, I'll give you a little bit of a perspective from my point of view here. I've been, I sell they're called grab-and-go buckets, one-month unit of food, breakfast, lunch, and supper for 1 month, and it comes in a standard and a hearty. So this is a food, emergency food package, very well designed, and I was selling Mountain House. We all know what happened there. That is no longer available to the public. Some is being shipped, but the little bit that is being shipped is being consumed by orders that are already in. So it's not something that you're going to get if you put an order in now. So that's why I switched to the grab-and-go buckets. It's something that's on the shelf. It's available now. And so we're working very hard to get these orders out, and we do everything in the orders that the orders were received. But here's the point. The world is waking up somewhat in mass. People who didn't think about anything like this a year ago are starting to want to become prepared. A lot of them are confused. They don't know what to do. So as a result of this, everything on the shelf there's pressure being put on any kind of emergency commodity. The water filters, as far as the pre-filters are concerned, we have the ability to get so many of these and put them together. Not everybody in the United States is going to be able to get one. There just aren't going to be that many, or anywhere close to it. As far as food and water filters, the same issue. The more we order, the more orders we get, and it seems like it's a leapfrog effort to try and keep ahead of orders. So I just want to let people know that, like last weekend, I worked all weekend, so did other people that helped me out, trying to get everything organized. And so the basic issue here is that if you are interested in emergency items, order now and basically get in line. And once you put your order in, you're in line, and that's the best you can do. It's the best we can do. And as fast as humanly possible, everything goes out. A lot of times we're waiting for a part for this or that, and as soon as that comes in, the same day, everything goes out. That's just the way it's been. So, and I really appreciate people being patient. And that is the key, because once you're in the line, you're in the line. You've done, and everybody here is aware of that. But as far as shortages in the future, I would say in the future we're going to have shortages of water filters. I would say for sure we're going to have shortages of food. Flax, I think, is very available, but there again, I'm amazed at the number of people ordering flax now. It's something that, there are fields of it growing, but how much is being packaged and available to ship? Those are other issues. So at any rate, now flax is still quite available. The food is available. We have warehouses full of the grab-and-go buckets. And there was I called around this past couple weeks just trying to get a handle on water filters. Excuse me. The stainless steel water filters are going to be in short supply, and there are that's going to happen in the future. We're still able to keep up right now. All I'm saying is, if you're interested in any of these items, order now. Just get in line, and but there are going to be shortages in the future as people wake up to the fact that they have to have filtered water. The pre-filter is something that I think is very necessary, and I'm going to do everything I can do to keep ahead of orders. But even last August, when there was not a lot of pressure on orders of the pre-filter, as there will be now due to the Japan issue, that sold out in a flash. It was just amazing. And I was like, okay, I had to take it off the webpage so that we could catch up. And it's taken us, it took us a couple months to catch up. And now then it took us a couple months to prepare for the future. Now I'm announcing it again, but I'm expecting the pre-filter to sell a lot. And when it sells out to the point where we can't keep up with it anymore, we'll have to take it off the page. So when you see something there, order it. And as I said, get your name on the line, because that's the way things are going now. Okay, I'm going to switch gears here a little bit. Tsunamis and coal and oil. Now, we all know what happened in Japan. Everybody's seen the pictures. The mounds of rubble sitting there, entire cities piled up against the hillside. You know, this is what a tsunami does. It takes everything in its path. It's like a giant bulldozer 1,300 miles long with everything. It takes everything in its path. So a tsunami is a tremendous force. For those people who don't really understand quite exactly what's going on with a tsunami, it's a long ocean wave. Imagine a wave that's 4 or 5 or 6 feet high. Most of us think of waves that are maybe, if it's a 5-foot wave, it might be a 10-foot long wave, and then there's another wave. So that might be the situation, that the wave is, or it might be a 20-foot wave and 40 feet long, something like that, an ocean wave. A tsunami wave is very, it starts out as a big pulse, and as it goes out on the ocean, it spreads out. So you might have a wave that's, the wave that came into Japan, excuse me, was like 9 meters high. So what, 9 times 3? 35, 37 feet tall, something like that. But it's many miles long. So if you were in a boat in the ocean, you wouldn't even notice it going by. You wouldn't feel a wave. You would slowly go up, and then you would slowly go down over quite a long period of time. But as this wave moves into land, all of that water is moving behind it. So you have a wave that's many miles long, and it doesn't stop. It's not going to stop for trees. It's not going to stop for anything, for buildings, for railroad cars. It's not going to stop for anything. And so anyway, what I want to relate here is a good story. Ignatius Donnelly was the lieutenant governor of Minnesota back in the 1800s. And in his book, Atlantis, the Antediluvian World, he talks about the coal fields of Pennsylvania, where he grew up. He grew up in Pennsylvania in the coal fields. And these were miles and miles of coal, and then there would be a gravel layer or something like that, and another layer of coal. And so it was surface. They would mine the coal on the surface. But how did that coal get there? And what is coal? Well, as Velikovsky points out, coal is the compilation or piling up of a large amount of matter, green. Basically, it's green when it gets piled up. So all of this matter, and I remember in Madagascar a couple years ago, there was a tidal wave, the one that resulted from the tsunami in that hit India from also from Java, from that area over there. Remember the big earthquake tsunami? And when it hit Madagascar, which is an island off the east side of Africa, it's a big island, almost continent, it's so big. When that hit, that the tidal wave drove the vegetation miles and miles inward and piled it up against the mountain ranges and the hillsides. And that would eventually become coal. As the pressure basically forced the water out, now in a lot of coal you find oil and a very harsh chemical deposits in the coal. So it's not just plant matter, and this varies depending on the coal deposit. But at any rate, where did these great tsunamis come from? We all know that in the Canary Islands, for example, there are a lot of people afraid that there could be an earthquake in the Canary Islands and do exactly the same thing that happened in Japan, and this tidal wave would rush across the Atlantic Ocean, and basically it would wipe out the east coast of the United States. You know, 6 or 8 or 10 hours later, I don't know how long it would take that wave to get across the Atlantic Ocean, but basically the same thing could happen, and apparently that has happened many times, these big underwater landslides. And so in the Pennsylvania coal fields, look at how far in those waves had to come to pile up that living plant matter to make the coal fields there. But the other thing is, how did the oil and the chemicals get into the coal? Because plant matter really doesn't have all of those harsh chemicals. Well, that's where the comet issue comes in. When a big comet comes by planet Earth, which has happened many times in its history, Planet X types of objects. They're not all necessarily Planet X. Remember, there are many Planet X objects out there. So just statistically, over the history of the Earth, these big waves have come in, caused the tidal waves that are a result of the passing object. Remember that the moon basically causes a tidal wave every day. We call it the tides. But a passing large celestial object would also send a big wave coming into the coastlines and do the same thing as a tsunami. At the same time, Earth passing through that large tail of the comet with flooding, as in the Great Flood, and also the rain of naphtha, which the ancients talked about, when the comet Venus, when Earth passed through the tail of comet Venus for 40 days and 40 nights, that's where the oil and the chemicals came in, what the ancients called naphtha. So that's where coal, that's where oil comes from, and that's why sometimes you find oil mixed in the coal, and sometimes you don't find oil mixed in the coal. If coal always formed in the same way due to basic earth processes with nothing from outside, then coal would not be the viable energy source that we see. A lot of the energy that comes from burning coal comes from burning the oil and the chemical pollutants that got into the oil when the comet came by and Earth passed through the comet tail, the hydrocarbons, etc. That's where a lot of the energy in coal comes from when it burns. So at any rate, now that we're kind of aware of tsunamis, when that topic is big in the news, I thought I'd cover that issue and talk about the origins of coal and why some coal has a lot of burning capacity and why some coal doesn't. The coal that was made from that tsunami in Madagascar won't have a lot of oil in it. It'll just be basically dried, smashed plant matter. And the thing that Velikovsky pointed out was when you take a piece of coal and you pick it up, it's not like that piece of charcoal you use in your barbecue. It typically comes up in layers, and you see the impacted leaves. It's like all these leaves are smashed together. The leaves were whole and living when they got smashed together. It wasn't something that was decayed plant matter that then compressed. So at any rate, okay, on to the next topic. A number of weeks ago, I talked about an article out of Popular Science magazine. And it was After Earth was the name. This is in the March issue of Popular Science. And I talked about this Gee Whiz article that basically started out by pretending to excite you to about all the future of man in space and going to the stars, etc., etc. But what it really turned into is a big collage of technologies that couldn't possibly work. But I left the best for last, and I really didn't have time to go into this that particular night. Then the Japan earthquake and tsunami, all of that hit the streets, and so I haven't been able to get back to it. But now I'm going to spend a few minutes talking about this. On page 102 of Popular Science, this is the March 2011 issue, there's a comment at the very end, and it says, this is from Dennis Bushnell, NASA Langley chief scientist, and it says that about our space prospects, he responds by offering a far more sobering view. And I always get a kick how they leave this for the very last part of the article. So the article was pumping you up and with rockets going into space and all kinds of technologies, and people were making suggestions, and there were think tank information. There was NASA studies, $200 million NASA studies. But here, the very last page is the NASA chief scientist about our prospects of going into space. And he says, he emphasized how little we still know about the effects of cosmic radiation and zero gravity on the human body and mind. How we don't even have space suits that protect against radiation. What's affordable is not safe. What's safe is not affordable. He repeated as a kind of mantra. And so at any rate, I'm going to read this again because it's just so telling. Basically what it says is NASA can't go into space. We stay in low Earth orbit with the space shuttle, and that program is dying now. They got the space station, which is the same issue. It's in a low Earth orbit. NASA has never been out of low Earth orbit since the so-called moon program. So here we have the chief scientist at NASA saying that we don't have the ability to go in space. And he says, he emphasized how little we still know about the effects of cosmic radiation and zero gravity on the human body and mind. How we don't even have space suits that protect against radiation. How did they ever go to the moon in 1969 and a bunch of times after that into the 1970s? How did NASA go to the moon? It was never an issue then. All those guys came back just swell. And they were out in free space, out of the Earth's magnetic field, out of the magnetic sheath around Earth. They were off in free space, floating around, walking around the moon, they said. How did those guys get away with that? And never there was a problem. And now you have the head scientist NASA saying that we can't do this. And we don't even know how to do it. We don't know about cosmic radiation or zero gravity. Something's wrong here, folks. But basically, after this, the point is twofold. And I should throw this in quickly. Why has NASA never used artificial gravity? It's very easy to do. You just put two things on the end of a rod and spin it. You put one part of your space station over here. You don't even need a solid rod. All you need is a string. And you spin those things, and then the things on the end have artificial gravity. Why has NASA never done that? The space station is up there and floating around with zero gravity. Why has NASA, and it's so obvious, I mean, it's one of the very first things that people realized when they even started thinking about going into outer space, was you could spin something and create artificial gravity. Why has NASA never done that? You got me. Why has NASA never done a lot of things? Why is this guy saying, who's the chief scientist at NASA, saying that, excuse me, that there's a problem with zero gravity on the human body when it's tremendously easy to create artificial gravity, and then there would not be a problem. But the radiation is a real problem. It's always been a problem. It's not going to go away, and it was a problem in 1969, even though NASA didn't know about it at the time. But I think they did know about it at the time, and I think that's why, I'm not going to go into the moon issue, because it's really a diversion from what's going on. We've got a lot of bigger fish to fry today. But I just wanted to cap off that lecture that I gave a couple weeks ago by saying that, first of all, this article, this Gee Whiz article, which is supposed to get you all fired up about going into space and even off to the next star system, and we could be living on planets around other stars. And you come to the last page, and the head guy at NASA says, we don't know anything about it. We know very little. And there's really not much we know about it, nothing we can do about it. So that's after 50 years of a space program. And in a sense, he's right, but there are solutions to these problems. But once again, remember that NASA's job is to give the garbage science that goes to the public. Somewhere out there, there are people working on real problems, and if they have solutions to those real problems, they're not going to be available for you or me. So at any rate, let me just spend the last minute on preparedness. A lot of people want to know what to do. The reason I put things on my webpage is because they're well thought out. The grab and go buckets, I've been pretty amazed at the success of these, and it's very simple. A number of weeks ago, I was talking to a woman whose brother suggested that she become involved in preparedness. She has a couple kids, and she was single, and she really didn't know what to do. So she ended up ordering 8 cases of flax, and it was just for her and a couple kids. And she called, and she wanted to know if that was a good idea. And I said, well, it's good in a sense, but it's not balanced. And so what we did is converted some of those cases of flax to grab-and-go buckets, something that's immediately available. The flax is something that is good that goes with anything. You can eat it every day. And by the way, all of these things I use regularly. My water filter I use all the time. My emergency food, I use it not every day, but I use it regularly, so I'm used to it. The flax, I use that every day. Every day I use flax. In one form or another, you can use it in cooking. And then you can replace eggs with flax seed. You can replace oil in cooking. There's so many ways to use it. Or just eat it raw. You can grind it up in the ground flax. You can put in juice or whatever. Just many ways to use it. So at any rate, I just want to let you know that go to the webpage, jmccsci.com, and pretty much everything you really need is there. This is Jim McCanny. This is my Science Hour, and as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.